second hour of Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bulbarch and Matt Douglas. We're with you up until 6:37 tonight. And then it's time for Cleveland Indians baseball. Try playing host to the Boston Red Sox a little bit later on in the show. We'll have a chance to break that trade down even further with Joe Smith coming back to the Tribe and helping out that bullpen. But that's later on in the show. Right now, we turn our attention to high school sports. Believe it or not, high school football practices begin today. It's hard for us to fathom where this summer may have actually gone, but it feels like it's almost over and done with. And we've got Tim Street from the OHSAA on the line with us right now. Tim, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Andy, Matt, thanks for having me on. You are right. The summer is over.
Yeah, it's a blessing and a curse in some ways for all the obvious reasons. Can't believe these football practices have begun today. All the other fall sports begin practice tomorrow. Now, I want to get into some of the rules and regulations surrounding practice guidelines on full contact and heat illness. Just want to give you a chance to kind of elaborate on those rules, because I know they've certainly changed drastically over the years. But if we can begin with the heat illness. Now, this hasn't been a crazy hot summer, but obviously something that's addressed, especially when you get into these fall practices in early August.
Yeah, they do, and you're right that we looks like we're going to kind of dodge a bullet this August. I looked at the 15-day forecast this morning, and it doesn't look like we have any days in the 90s coming up, but there's a lot of days in the 80s. But, yeah, for those out there listening, it is so much different now than it was 20 years ago, definitely prior to that. The main thing to know is hydration is the key, and we just cannot encourage enough our schools to make sure there's plenty of water out there and that kids can take water breaks when they need it. But you're right that it's a serious issue. Every year around the country, it seems like there's one or two heat-related deaths from a student-athlete, which is just tragic. You just hate to see or hear that ever would happen. But the thing we are confident is that our coaches in Ohio are aware of that and that they know how important hydration is. And we have a whole set of guidelines on our website that not only stress that about the hydration, but also give you a breakdown on when the temperature reaches this, check the humidity. And if the humidity level is this, you have to, you know, whether it's take water breaks mandatory every 15 minutes, or even in some cases, you have to stop practice. And so there's those regulations on our site, too, that we want to make sure everyone's aware of.
And as far as the full contact rules are concerned, I know that certainly goes into effect once you get at least a week or two into the football season. But obviously with the rest of the fall sports really getting into full swing tomorrow, that's something that certainly takes effect. And maybe you find more of the effects of that when we get into the actual season itself. But I know those have certainly evolved over the years, especially when you consider the damage that's been done with concussions and all the research that's been done there now that we know more than we did 20 years ago. So if you can kind of elaborate on that as well with the guidelines as far as full contact are concerned.
Sure. In fact, we're going into our third football season with the current regulations, which really do limit how much full go contact that kids can have during practice. And for those out there that don't know, if you were driving around today and you saw any football practice, you noticed that all the kids were just wearing helmets. That is called the 5-day acclimatization period, where kids can only wear helmets for a couple days, then they can add shoulder pads, and then on the 5th day you can go in full pads, but you can't hit yet. And then after 5 days of that acclimatization period, then you can have full go contact. So there's a buildup process that all kids have to go through before they can start hitting. And then when you can start hitting, there's limits on how much hitting a kid can do, and that is all based on the concussion research that we have, as you mentioned, because the main thing that the research shows is that it's the cumulative effect of head-to-head trauma that really is what causes damage down the road. That is part of it. The other part, too, is that if a student-athlete does get a concussion, that they don't return to play before they're cleared by a doctor. The worst thing you can do is have a concussion and still be having symptoms of a concussion and then get another one. That can be fatal. And so what we try to stress is that if a kid has a concussion, make sure they're cleared by a doctor, and then they can play again. And, you know, so many of us back when we played, we had a concussion and maybe didn't even know it, but now the research is so much better. There's more doctors and trainers that are available to these schools. So it's not like a concussion can end your career. I had a number of concussions that didn't end my career, but, you know, main thing is to be safe, take your time with it, and make sure that doctors are there in charge.
Tim, a couple of exciting things happening here in fall sports, one of which being the competitive balance divisions that have come out. Can you explain that a little for the listeners and why you guys felt it was important to put that into place?
Sure. I'll tell you what, I'll give you the short version and then you guys expand on it because we could probably talk for an hour on competitive balance. But you're right that this fall is the first fall in which what I'll call our quote-unquote competitive balance process is now in effect. And long story short, the OHSAA believes that public and non-public schools should be together in the same association and should be in the same tournament divisions just based on the enrollment of your school. But not everyone feels that way. And obviously we respect that. We understand that. And actually about 8 or 9 years ago, a group of public school superintendents in Northeast Ohio began a petition to separate, to have public schools and private schools in different separated divisions in our tournament. And for lots of reasons, which we can get into if you want, but for a lot of reasons, we did not feel that that was what should happen in Ohio. So we had a counter proposal that is called the competitive balance, and that really drills down to the rosters on the teams and where the kids come from. If a kid has grown up going to that school forever, they're not going to count any more than the one kid that they are. But if a kid is, for example, a recent move-in and they didn't change houses, for example, they go across town to a different school, or they go to a private school and they did not go to that that type of school in junior high, well, then in that case, they're going to count more than one. They're going to count, you know, maybe two, maybe five in basketball. And what that does then is it causes some of those schools to move up a division, and that's the point of competitive balance, is that the schools are in the same association, the OHSAA, they're in the same tournament, but maybe it adjusts and maybe better reflects what division they should be in the tournament. And so that's the cut and dried version of competitive balance. We're in our first year for it, so let's see how it works for a year or two, and then maybe we'll tweak it after that.
Again, we're talking with Tim Street of the OHSAA, and you're right, I think we could probably do an entire show on competitive balance. There's no question about that. And I think you detailed that very, very well there. And I know it's always something that you guys are going to look at and try and monitor as you see fit, but that's a discussion I'm sure will certainly pop up again. I wanted to talk to you about something else that you guys just mentioned. Football typically rules the roost on Friday nights for all the obvious reasons, but you're also promoting a soccer initiative called Friday Night Football. And I hope I said that the right way. But
I think you pronounced that pretty well.
I try. I better practice it a couple times. But for those that don't know what is Friday Night Football exactly, and why the Big Friday initiative on soccer?
Sure, yeah, thanks for asking about that. And I bet you could probably pronounce football all kinds of different ways. And for those that haven't figured it out yet, we're talking about F-U-T-B-O-L. The soccer version of football, right? Jerry Snodgrass, our assistant commissioner, came up with this idea a few years ago. And what it is meant to do is make the opening night for high school soccer special. And what it is this year is on the Friday night, which I believe is August 19th, if I have my calendar right. That is the opening night for high school soccer. And it is before the high school football season begins. It might be August 18th, whatever that Friday night is. high school football doesn't start till the following week, and so there's no football games yet. Some schools still have a scrimmage left, or they do that on Saturday. But what we intend to do is have schools hype up soccer that particular night at their school. We encourage their marching bands to come out and do their halftime show for the first time, or other types of shows. That's where a lot of schools will do their meet the team nights. Just try to put some focus and bring some attention to high school soccer. And, you know, you hear Friday night football all the time with obviously high school football. And this might be a little tongue-in-cheek way of, you know, saying Friday night football on the soccer side. And so we've had a lot of success with it. In fact, the last couple of years, it has been partnered with the Columbus Crew professional soccer team, and the Crew has been really excited about it because they can reach out to some of those soccer teams and get them back to Crew Stadium for a game and just kind of give a spotlight on soccer for a night.
I think it's interesting when you talk about soccer, just how that sport has grown in the United States. Of course, Cleveland just hosted the CONCACAF Gold Cup not too long ago. How have you seen soccer grow from the high school standard, especially with a team like the Columbus Crew in the state here to kind of help progress the sport?
Yeah, it has definitely grown. And, you know, I don't know if you guys have heard much about the Cincinnati professional soccer team. But they play at Nippert Stadium down at University of Cincinnati. It's a notch below the Crew, although they beat the Crew a few weeks ago in the Open Cup series. And they've been outdrawing the Crew on their attendance here recently, I believe. But the attention to soccer and the number of kids that play soccer, everyone knows that, is just a ballooning in Ohio and all across the country. So many youth kids are playing soccer now, which is great, and it keeps them just physically active and fit. The thing where I've seen it grow in two areas, number one is just the talent level that is out there. You know, back in the 80s and maybe up to the 90s, the number of Ohio kids that would go on to play soccer or pro, college or pro, maybe there weren't a lot of those. Now there's a lot of them. So that's obviously a good thing. The other thing I've seen, though, too, is sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes it's not a good thing. And that's where more kids are just specializing in soccer, and they play soccer all year round. And obviously the kids that are most talented, they want to do that. I guess I'll just say we just really encourage kids to play multiple sports. You play soccer in the fall for your school, you know, maybe do a winter sport or a spring sport for your school too. So I always like to have a chance to throw that out there as, you know, the playing for your school is special. We hope kids do that and then hopefully play another sport too.
Tim Street of the OHSAA is our guest here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. And before we cut you loose, I wanted to hit on this especially. You guys recently announced that along with the District Athletic, you have awarded nearly $150,000 in college scholarships. That's obviously great, great stuff. What are the details on that, and how was this all made possible?
Sure. That's one of my favorite press releases that we send out every year. And it was a couple weeks ago when we had all the final list of the award winners for each district. Ohio's divided into six districts. There's a district athletic board that runs each of those districts, and the folks on those district athletic boards select the scholarship winners. And we're not talking full rides to colleges. We're not talking, you know, I think the scholarships are anywhere from a couple thousand down to even $500 or $700. And actually, it's important to know, too, that any of the students that are sorry, a police officer just went by me there. Any of the student athletes that are receiving athletic scholarships are not eligible to receive a scholarship from a district athletic board. But the district athletic boards have a whole list of criteria that they use to determine the scholarship winners. It's based on grade point average, standardized test scores, ACT or SAT, and number of varsity letters won. And it's really interesting because you get some kids that, unbelievably, they got a 4.0 GPA and they've earned something like 14 varsity letters at their school. Just very impressive, the kind of young people that we have in Ohio, and to be able to have the resources to grant scholarships that total that amount is pretty special.
So you're saying this money goes to the kids that haven't necessarily gotten any athletic scholarship funding from any college or university. This goes to the kids that maybe didn't get any of that financial aid or assistance. This goes to the kids that weren't offered any kind of money whatsoever?
Correct, yeah. If a student-athlete receives athletic scholarship money, they cannot receive an OHSAA scholarship. So that, and there are some that that do receive athletic scholarships, and then their name comes off the table, and that award from us goes down to the next deserving person. So it's a win-win situation. But our intent is that these scholarships are going to the kids that are not getting athletic money. They are getting their education helped pay for with this money because they've excelled so much in the classroom, but they're also great athletes too. So it's a combination of both. But yeah, if they have athletic scholarship money from an NCAA school, they are not going to receive one of these.
Wow. Well, that's really special stuff, because a lot of times those are the ones that really do need it, because you always see the commercials played that, you know, X amount of student athletes at the NCAA level, whatever it might be, they end up going pro in something other than sports. And look, a lot of times if you're not getting athletic scholarship money to go to a college, university, if you're going to college, chances are you're going to become a pro in something other than sports. So that's really, really cool stuff. Very, very awesome that all that money is going to those kids. And obviously for all the folks out there listening right now, they need to be clued in on what goes on there with that whole process, how that comes down the pipe, and who it benefits. That's really, really cool stuff. Tim, we could spend more time with it, but we know you're busy, and we don't want you to get pulled over. One cop blew by you already, so hopefully that's the only one that rolls past you. Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, well, luckily he wasn't pulling me over. He was going on up ahead. But, no, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Let's chat anytime. Just let me know.
Absolutely. That's Tim Stree with the OHSAA spending some time with us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to get a break in here in a couple of minutes. We'll get to Your Money Now and Matt Douglas with the local news on AM 930 WEOL.
Hi, I'm Tom Hamilton, voice of the Cleveland Indians. Now the